Blog Talk Radio.
Now, in its second edition, Carol Dean's popular book, The Art of Film Funding, has 12 new chapters to cover all areas of film financing and how to avoid expensive pitfalls. Learn how to start with an idea and end with a trailer. How to make an ask for money. Create your story structure and your trailer. Legal advice, fair use, successful crowdfunding, how to ask for music rights, and what insurance you can't shoot without. Available on Amazon under Carol Dean and at FromTheHeartProductions.com. Welcome to The Art of Film Funding. I'm your co-host, Claire Papin, along with Carol Dean, author of the best-selling book, The Art of Film Funding. Carol is also the founder and president of From the Heart Productions and the host of this show. Our guest today is Jerry Deaton. He started in the business as a songwriter, and now his credits span from re-recording mixer, ADR mixer, dialogue editor to sound design editor, composer, and everything in between. As president of Audio Cut Audio Post, Jerry uses new technology, Nuendo, Pro Tools, Final Cut Pro, and Premiere Pro software. He spent the last 5 years developing Audio Cut Audio Post as one of the new breed of boutique affordable Audio Post facilities in Los Angeles. Jerry's vision of the new Hollywood has connected him with many like-minded independent filmmakers and support teams that understand big budgets do not necessarily make great films. It still takes talent, a good story, and an artisan approach to technology. And Carol, I understand that Jerry Deaton is a donor to the Roy Dean Film Grants.
Yes, he is. Audio Cut gives a generous discount to our winner. And we're very honored to have you with us, Jerry.
Thanks, Carol. Good to be here.
So we have a lot to learn today. We want to know how filmmakers can come to you with an excellent sound on their film so that they can use your services to enhance their film and not repair mistakes. So first of all, let's start with what Audio Cut does.
Well, Audio Cut is it's an audio post-production house, and it caters to independent producers and filmmakers. And some of our services include 5.1 mixing, digital Foley and live Foley, dialogue editing, music editing, sound design, audio restoration, voiceover work, music production, DVD, Blu-ray authoring, and a few other services that I won't waste your time talking about. But basically anything that has to deal with audio for a film, we take care of it and set up all the deliverables for the producer or the director of a film.
Great, great. Well, I got stuck on the voiceover work because in documentaries, we have a lot of them come through From the Heart, and they are always looking for places to go to record the voiceover. So they come in with their film and their script and that's it. You teach them how to do it?
Yeah, pretty much the standard way of doing it. For documentaries, a lot of stuff is caught in an off-camera position, so it doesn't have to be synced to picture.
Uh-huh.
So the actor will come in and read from the script, and sometimes the director or writer might want to modify the script a little bit to fit their later needs. So they'll bring in the script or the edited script, and the actors will come in, and they will basically just read the script over the microphone, and then at a later date, the director and myself will slide the audio to wherever the director wants for timing in the film. If it is an on-camera situation, then you have to do ADR, which is basically syncing up the new vocal or the new voiceover to the old production video. And that requires a little bit of talent and a little bit of technology. It requires the actor to be able to recreate their moment that they had when they filmed it originally, but doing it in a voiceover situation, in a very sterile environment, and to recreate that acting nuance that they had at the original shoot. And then if their lips don't match their their new spoken words exactly. We have technology to line that up so that it looks as if it was done from the original production. So it's basically a little bit of magic in film work that fools the listener into thinking, well, that was done at the original time it was done. So that's one of the little tricks we use to fool the audience.
All right, great. Well, I have heard some documentarians say that they were able to hire a well-known voice, an A-list actor, and give them a script and have them in and out of the voiceover in a half a day. And I can guess that since that is the recording only, and then you go back with the director to place the voice in the right places, that could happen, right? You
Correct,
could do,
yeah.
Say, a 60-minute doc, do the voiceover in a half a day shooting or auditing.
Yeah, that, you know, a lot of times, you know, if you have an A or B-list actor, their time constraints are crazy. They don't have time to do this, and they're usually doing it as a favor for you, even though it's part of the contract usually. They're still kind of making you feel like it's a favor. So they come in, and what a smart director will do, especially on a first or second film, knowing they only have that actor for a very limited amount of time, is they will pre-plan all of the dialogue that they need, know where it's going to go in their picture, and not worry about placing it at the session. Just get all of the dialogue from the actor, and then later go and insert it where they need it. That way they're not missing any pieces that they didn't think about. So the director in a new film or in an independent film should definitely pre-plan where they want all the lines to be, and that way they don't take up a lot of the actor's time searching through the whole film for the places to lay these dialogue pieces in. And
it
the
also
actor
cuts
gets
down
out of
on the expenses too, doesn't it?
It does. I'll tell you from my experience, it's more about making the actor feel like they've done a good job quickly and they can get out of there and go on and do what they need to do more than it is to save money. Because the worst thing you want is an actor coming in feeling like they're there way too long, their voice getting a little grovelly, them getting a little irritated that they're there longer than they need to be, and then the whole thing starts going on a downward spiral. So there's a little bit of psychological games you have to keep in mind if you're an independent producer or director when you're dealing with A and B list talent. If you're dealing with the rest of the crew who's just happy to be there, you'll never get an attitude. But some of the more experienced people, they want to be in and out.
Yeah, that's so true. Well, speaking of independent filmmakers, what I often hear is that filmmakers will say, well, I can get the whole crew for free, but I can't get a sound person for free. Why is that?
Well, I would say the first thing is, why would you want to get a sound person for free? Because you will get what you paid for. And the sound, it's hard to convince a first-time director or a first-time producer how critical good sound is to a film. If the sound is not recorded properly, if the production sound is not recorded properly, and usually that's because you've hired someone cheap or free or doesn't have the right equipment or the right experience, then what's going to happen is you're going to have to fix that at a studio like mine. And you're going to have to do tons of ADR work, and you're going to have to call in a lot of favors to get this done. It's going to take you a lot more time, a lot more money. And you're not going to have a lot of directors, especially first-time directors, they're very upset when they have to replace what they consider the production magic, the moment that was caught in time. They get very upset because it's their baby. What they don't know is on the $30 million projects, you know, 70% of the movies are ADR. So those directors don't care anymore. It's only the first-time directors, the first-time producers that are really married to the magic that happened when it was filmed. So if you are of that mindset, you really want to capture the sound as pristine as possible, and you should just pay a sound guy because they're going to really save you tons of money and time in the end.
Okay, then tell us how you. What is the best way to select a sound person, Jerry?
The best way, and not a lot of people do this, but this is the best way. Find out what movies the sound person has recorded, and then find out what audio post companies have received those files, and then call those other audio post companies and say, by the way, what kind of shape were those audio post sounds in?
Of course.
And those people will tell you the truth. They'll say, well, we had to replace 70% of the production dialogue. And if you hear that, run from that person.
Okay.
So, you know, you want to get a report where they say, oh, we only had to replace, like, you know, 5% of the dialogue. Everything else was in great shape. There were no generators running in the background. There was no radio frequency hissing coming from the microphones, from the RF interference. You know, they'll tell you. They'll just be straight up, and they're happy to give you the information you need to make a decision.
Right. That's brilliant. Okay. Now, when filmmakers get to post, what do you find are the most common audio problems?
The most common are off-mic recordings where the boom operator couldn't cover two shots the same way, and his mic is too far away from the subject, and the subject sounds like they're talking in a cavern, and they don't have lav mics, or they don't have the budget to put lav mics, which, for all those people who don't know what lav mics are, they're little tiny mics that clip onto the actor's clothing, and it captures pristine, beautiful audio from the actor as they're speaking. So if they don't have the budget for that, for the actors, then they use what's called a shotgun mic, and it's the guy that holds it on a pole above the actors out of the camera shot and tries to catch the sound straight from the actor's mouth in the live room. Now, that works great a lot of times if the person's very experienced, the boom operator is very experienced. If they're not experienced, they can miss a lot of angles on the actors, and you get this off-mic sound where, like I say, you sound like you're coming from a cavern, and that all has to be ADR'd, every bit of it, because it's just unacceptable. You cannot get a movie distributed if your movie sounds like it was recorded in a cavern.
Right. Well, do you often find that filmmakers come in where they lost a mic and they're only left with the room mic for the final audio?
That happens too, and sometimes just the mic has crackling noises and it distorts. Or the other bad situations is when the recordist is in a noisy environment, there's generators going, or they're filming straight from the camera, from the shotgun straight from the camera, and you actually hear, even with the digital cameras, you hear a little bit of the noise coming off of the camera or the camera operator.
Mm-hmm.
The other kind of problems that I've heard is RF frequency noise, which is sometimes you get in certain neighborhoods and the RF frequencies that are transmitted from the wireless lavalier microphones, it picks up extra noise signals. And those are in a high bandwidth, and they're very perceivable to the human ear. So I spend a lot of time filtering those out in post-production. That stuff is hard to avoid. Even with seasoned pros, they can't control the environment. But things like generators, refrigerators in the background, noisy sets, airplanes flying by, all that stuff should be caught from an experienced sound recordist in the field. And you just got to tell the director we got to do that again because there was a plane flying by.
Right. Well, Jerry, I love mysteries, and what I find is that there are a lot of female stars who believe that when they whisper that you will pay close attention to them, and usually they whisper the key fact in the mystery, and I can't hear them. And so a lot of people are complaining about the people who whisper or sort of mumble their lines. And how do you handle that when you have an independent film where one person is speaking in a normal tone and then the next person is very soft?
The only way to really fix a problem like that is if they're whispering and the noise of the room is almost as loud as they're whispering or they're mumbling or you have some other problem with it and it's intelligible, you have to ADR it, especially if it's a key story point and the viewer has to know what's going on. You have to ADR that, and then once you ADR it, you have a clean piece of audio that you can place in the mix wherever it's obvious for the listener to hear it. If it's salvageable from the production dialogue, and you can manipulate the audio in a way so that the listener can hear it very easily, then you use that piece of audio. And if the other actor is talking in another level, like maybe they're talking loud and it goes from loud to a whisper, that's a mix issue. You just have to learn how to mix that so that it makes sense. Because I'm sure most viewers have watched a movie, and for instance, a typical example is you see a close up of a match go off, and you hear this incredible fire roar, usually, especially in the big budget films. Well, I mean, that's like the sound of a match from a gnat's ears perspective.
Yes.
I mean, as humans, we can't hear that match do that.
Right.
Especially if we're 3 feet away. So those are the little tricks in mixing that, you know, bring the story to the match with sound. And you do the same thing with whispers. If it's a key moment, that whisper has got to be intelligible so that you can bring it up for the story in the mix.
Okay, great. Now, tell us, how do we assemble audio to go to the post stage? Is there anything that we should know to do with the audio before going into post?
Yes, and most video editors already know this, and they'll guide you through this, but most audio post houses just require that the audio is delivered in a format called OMF, and that is nothing more than a wrapper for all of the files in the entire sequence to live in. And that one file is sent to the audio post house, you know, it'd be called mymovie.omf. And when I open it in my system, all of those dialogue pieces and sound effects and everything come into my system lined up perfectly in time code with the original picture. So it's just as if the editor brought over his entire rig to my studio and set it up. It's the same thing. It's just a great way of transferring digital files.
Okay. Now, how much sound design and sound work should my film editor do in preparation for audio post?
Oh, boy, that's a real gray area. A lot of times, from my perspective as an audio post facility, I say the bare minimum because that's really my job. And they're going to use – video editors usually have access to some very limited samples that really don't sound good, explosions, car wrecks, things like that. They're just – it's kind of like shopping at Walmart for something. They get the bottom rung of sounds. And they put them in there as placeholders, which is a great idea if you just want placeholders to tell the sound design guy where they want certain things. But I don't think video editors should try to sound design the film, even though the director really wants to see the vision of the film at the edit bay.
Yeah.
But, you know, directors are more and more starting to ask the video editors to put in more sound effects. And they do that just because they want to see the vision of the film. They can't wait till they get to audio post, or they may not be intending to go to audio post. They may think it can all be done by the video editor. And I'm seeing a lot of that these days because the budget's tightening up. People are like, I don't know if I have the budget to go to audio post, but I would tell those people that if they had an opportunity to see their film with completed from an audio post house and then A-B it with their film completed by a video editor, they would certainly understand the value immediately because their film would be incredibly different. It would be so much better if they go through the audio post process on many levels.
Okay, well, let me ask you, how is the sound taken from the editor's bay to the post audio computer system?
Well, like I said, it's transferred through those files, the OMF files.
Okay.
That's an encapsulated file where all of the sound lives. It's basically a roadmap file. So that file leaves the editor's bay and is just sent over the internet to the audio post house. And the audio post house opens that file in their application. For me, it's Nuendo. I work in that platform. Some people work in Pro Tools. It works the same way. They open up that file that the editor sent, and all of the information for the entire movie just pops up, and it's all in sync.
Okay, so now that my files are in your system, what do you do in audio post that actually improves the film?
Well, the main thing is cleaning up the dialogue. A lot of times dialogue from production is very sloppy and very unintelligible sometimes, and it has problems, and it needs to be fixed. So the first attack is on the dialogue, to get the dialogue as clean and pristine and up front in the mix as possible so that no story elements are lost. And that it's not a distraction to the viewer that, you know, you don't want somebody saying a love line and all of a sudden you hear like a mic stand drop from production. I mean, it just completely destroys the moment. So those things occur. You have to, in audio post world, you have to remove mic stands that are falling in the middle of a love scene. So dialogue is the first thing that you attack. The second thing that you attack is the backgrounds. You want to match all the backgrounds to the visual that you see from the movie. If a movie was shot in Philadelphia, you want to make sure that your attention to detail is on Philadelphia kind of birds during the day. You don't want to put Hawaii's bird sounds on a Philadelphia shot.
Oh, my gosh, I never thought of anything as particular as that.
Oh, yeah, you really want to be as detail-itis as possible. If there's a car that goes by, you don't want to match a Ferrari engine with a Toyota drive-by. So those kind of things they're very subliminal, but if they're not done properly, the movie does not have a sense of believability. And it's all about creating that veil of illusion when you're doing the audio for a movie. You want the end listener to think all that stuff happened when they filmed it. It's all real. The nature sounds, the rain coming in, wind blowing, people walking around in a hospital, the hospital sounds, all that stuff is added after the fact because on production they can't control that, so they can't plan it. They just need to get their dialogue. So all that stuff is added in audio post, and it fills the film out. The film starts to expand and become bigger than life because, you know, it's right there in front of you. All those sounds are very rich, and they're right in front of you and mixed together to make a consistent ambient.
And then there's, of course,
music that's added. It's a lot of details.
Yes, and you know, I've done a lot of film work myself and working as an on-camera talent and as a voiceover. And one of the things that I've noticed, whenever I would work on a set, you mentioned a hospital room, everything is as quiet as possible during the scene for the dialogue. And then, because I was there, and I knew just how quiet it was. And then when I see the film later, all of these new sounds show up that were not present when we were actually filming. And so I know exactly what you're talking about, and it does make a big difference, doesn't it?
It does. It's called building a scene, by the way, where you start with only the dialogue and the visual, and you rebuild the entire environment. And it's very typical, and in audio post we do that scene by scene.
Rebuild a scene by scene. Wow, how exciting! Well, all
yeah,
right, now I've heard a lot of filmmakers
fun.
I don't know what happened. I played my film on my computer, and it sounded really good. But when we took it to the theater, there were all kinds of strange sounds that came through the theater sound system. What's the story there?
Well, when you play a film on a laptop, there's a couple things that go on. First of all, it's kind of like it's the lowest common denominator. The laptop speaker system is extremely basic, and it filters out a lot of nuances. So all you really get are the meat and potatoes when you're listening to it on a laptop. When you take it into a tuned room, a tuned audio post room, or a theater that's also tuned, then all the details that have been put into that film or all the problems that have not been taken out of that film are revealed. And
wow.
that's why it's very important, you know, to be with an experienced mixer who can, you know, take care of all that stuff and deliver a mix that will work not only in the theater but on a laptop or on your cousin's terrible TV set or over there at Best Buy when you're auditioning their 7.1 systems. I mean, it has to have portability. Your mix has to have portability on all of these systems.
Okay.
And that just requires experience.
Exactly. We could keep coming back to that, of which you have a lot, thank heavens. Now, what are the audio deliverables that distributors want these days?
Typically, they want the 5.1 mix, the surround mix. Then they also want what's called an LTRT, which is nothing more than a fold-down. Let me see how to explain this properly. It takes the 5.1 mix and it turns it into an encoded stereo file, which is just two tracks. And when those two tracks are played on somebody's home system and they have a Dolby system, those two tracks expand back out magically into a 5.1 full mix. So
wow.
the reason they used to do LTRTs was because when they laid this back to in the old film world, there was only two channels available to put the audio on. So they had to find a way to condense five or six mono tracks of the 5.1 down to the two tracks, and then it expands back out in the theaters because of a decoder in the theater systems. So they still want the LTRT. They usually want an AC3 file, which is, once again, a stereo file that's used for DVD and Blu-ray production that is the same thing. It's a 5.1 mix that is folded down or squeezed into two stereo tracks. And then when
Terry,
it's played on
to let you know we have about 1 minute left,
so
you can share.
Well, first I have to know what stage of production should a filmmaker contact the sound house like AudioCut?
Usually at the beginning of editing or maybe just a little bit before.
Okay.
The beginning of video editing.
Video editing. All right. So you're located in L.A., but do you do work for people out of state?
I do, yes. Yes, it's all done by the Internet.
How do people reach you, Jerry?
They can reach me through my website, www.audiokut.com. And my email's there, and they can find out all my contact information through the website.
Do you want to share your number as well?
Yeah, they can reach me at 818-434-2601.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Much.
I learned so much, Jerry. I really appreciate all this information. You work a lot on docs and independent films, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Thank you
this
so
has
much.
Been wonderful, Jerry. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
I want to remind our listeners that David Raiklin is a brilliant and talented award-winning musician who scores films and can compose music for a trio or for a full orchestra. David is a very good friend to the independent filmmaker and comes highly recommended by From the Heart Productions. If you need music to help tell your story, please contact him at davidraiklin.com. That's David, RAILKEN.com. And Carol and I want to thank you for tuning in to The Art of Film Funding. Please visit our website at FromTheHeartProductions.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good luck with your films, everyone.